It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Will you commit to no interference with the scope of the special counsel's investigation?
The scope of the special counsel's investigation is set by his charter and by the regulations, and I will ensure that those are maintained.
Will you commit to providing Mr. Mueller with the resources, funds, and time needed to complete his investigation?
Yes.
Will you commit to ensuring that Special Counsel Mueller is not terminated without good cause, consistent with department regulations?
Absolutely.
If Special Counsel Mueller makes any request, for instance, about the scope of his investigation or resources for his investigation, will you commit to notifying Congress if you deny that request?
I think the regulations require notification of Congress if there's a disagreement.
Thank you. And I have two questions from the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee. Will you commit to making any report Mueller produces at the conclusion of his investigation available to Congress and to the public?
As I said in my statement, I am going to make as much information available as I can, consistent with the rules and regulations that are part of the special counsel regulations.
Will you commit to making any report on the obstruction of justice public?
That's the same answer.
Thank you.
So that was William Barr, the president's nominee for attorney general, in his hearing yesterday with the Senate Judiciary Committee. That was the back and forth between him, at least part of it, of Senator Dianne Feinstein. Sandy Rios with you this morning. I think I sort of tipped my hand yesterday at how I feel about this, but I want to speak about it more. You're not going to hear much criticism of William Barr because he is the president's appointee and because he is a Republican, so people stay silent. I have to tell you, I am deeply concerned. You just heard it right there. What you didn't hear is that he and Bob Mueller go back years. They've been friends for decades. Very good friends. Robert Mueller, Bob, as he continued to call him in his testimony yesterday, attended both of his daughter's weddings. You know, he's not going to stop it. Bob's a fine man. He's an honest man. He would never be involved in a witch hunt, etc., etc. He also praised Rod Rosenstein and had really no serious criticism of James Comey. So I think I sort of knew we were in trouble before that, but I knew we were in trouble when the hearing started. And Mr. Barr turned around and introduced his family. Now, there's nothing wrong with his family. They look like a lovely family. I wish I'd pulled the introduction because you could hear it. One by one, he introduced them, and we found out that every single one of his kids are involved in government. They're either working at the Justice Department, they're working at various departments. You talk about, this is what happens. This is the tentacles that go into the swamp. This is the legacy of its, making your living off the taxpayers, all of your family, people who know people, get people hired, and your children, and people who know you, and they make a ton of money, and they are vested into the system. That's how it goes. Now, that's a harsh criticism, but I'm just telling you, that's the way it is. This man, William Barr, is not going to shake the tree. He's not going to shake the tree. He's not going to accuse his friend Bob of doing anything untoward in his investigation. And you heard our guest yesterday talk about how she had tracked how Bob Mueller had actually destroyed evidence, as James Comey did when he was investigating talking about investigating Mrs. Clinton, and they destroyed laptops, gave them back to people that should have been under investigation, the personal laptops in other cases. It's just amazing to me. And so one has to ask, you know, how did this happen? Someone suggested William Barr, and the president trusted this person and appointed him. Now, I could be wrong. I'm sure William Barr has done some good things. He's certainly has a resume that's impressive. In fact, Lindsey Graham says he is incredibly well qualified. Mr. Barr is the right guy at the right time. He's had the job in the past and is incredibly well qualified for the position of Attorney General. I want to congratulate President Trump on nominating someone of this caliber. And I want to go on and read this. He says, when it comes to policy, you can't expect a Republican nominee to adopt a Democratic agenda. But you can't expect them to be fair arbiters of the law. I voted for Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch, not because I agreed with their political philosophy or policy positions, but because I thought they were qualified. See, there you go with the problem right there, Mr. Graham. Respectfully, Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch were dishonest people who were not committed to the Constitution that you serve. They didn't care about the rule of law. They abused it. They abused their authority. And they did great destruction. But you blindly voted for them. Blindly. You weren't blind. Your justification was that they were well qualified. And it's the same thing that he's urging Democrats now to vote for William Barr because he's well qualified. Nothing to do with, as though his character and personal philosophy and commitment to the Constitution has nothing to do with it. One of the things that concerned me, and maybe this is mountain out of a molehill, but William Barr was asked why he wanted this job, and he basically said, "I want to help. I think I need to step up. Well, I've got no problem with that." But the second part of it was something to this effect: "I'm doing this from memory. I'm 60 some years old, and I don't need this, and so I won't be bound by trying to please anyone because basically I've put my time in, and they can't hurt me." See, that concerned me because you know what? You only do the right thing. That in itself is a red flag to me. So we don't only do the right thing. We only step out. We only take a risk. We only go to bat for what's right and wrong if there's no risk to us. And then once we reach retirement age and we have our pension, then we can actually do the right thing. That's basically what he's saying. I reject that. I totally reject that. I reject that. And so, I feel very strongly about this. I think we have a problem. But I think he's going to be confirmed. I think that the Democrats actually, I think they're really pleased. I think they're really pleased. And I think actually many, now others are saying differently, so I don't have any inside information. I'm just telling you my hunch is I think the Democrats will vote to confirm him. And then they'll boast about how bipartisan they are. It's a great boasting tool. This is our chance to be bipartisan. So Catherine Herridge did a report on the testimony that I, you know, would be helpful for you to hear. Let's listen.
William Barr testified that he has known Robert Mueller for 3 decades and Mueller would not be involved in a witch hunt. Barr said the recusal of Attorney General Jeff Sessions was the right thing and he committed to following the law and not bending to politics.
I will not be bullied into doing anything I think is wrong by anybody, whether it be editorial boards or Congress or the president.
From the outset, William Barr, the president's nominee to lead the Justice Department, said he will protect the special counsel investigation.
The country needs a credible resolution to these issues.
Barr said he saw no chance the probe would be shut down for cause, and he pledged to make the final Mueller report as public as possible.
I am going to try to get the information out there consistent with these regulations.
Are there any circumstances that would cause you to terminate the investigation?
Bob Mueller could only be terminated for good cause, and I frankly, it's unimaginable to me that Bob would ever do anything that gave rise to good cause.
Other Democrats pressed Barr in a memo he wrote last year to Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein that questioned whether the special counsel could bring an obstruction of justice case against the president for firing FBI Director James Comey.
If the president orders the Attorney General to halt a criminal investigation for personal reasons, would that be prohibited under your theory?
I think it would be a breach of the president's duties to faithfully execute the law. It would be an abuse of power.
Yeah, so that's the first part of the testimony. And Catherine went on to talk about it, so let's listen to the rest of it.
Barr also revealed that the president reached out to him about possibly joining his legal team in June 2017, where the limited conversation also turned to the special counsel.
He was interested in that, wanted to know, you know, what I thought about, you know, Mueller's integrity. And I said, Bob is a straight shooter.
Barr served as attorney general for Bush 41. And at 68, Barr suggested he was a strong candidate because he didn't need the job.
I'm in a position in life where I can do the right thing and not really care about the consequences.
On reports, the FBI opened an investigation into whether the president was directed by Russia to fire Comey in May 2017. Barr said the Bureau appeared to operate largely unchecked.
Are there rules about how you can do counterintelligence investigations?
I believe there are, Mr. Chairman.
So if you want to open up one against the president, are there any checks and balances?
Not outside the FBI.
On political bias at the FBI during the 2016 election, Barr called text messages between former agent Peter Strzok and former lawyer Lisa Page inappropriate.
I was shocked when I saw them.
Please get to the bottom of it. We're relying upon you to clean this place up.
And Barr pledged to investigate whether there was surveillance abuse during the 2016 campaign when a warrant was obtained and renewed multiple times using the anti-Trump dossier for Trump campaign aid.
All right, Catherine Herridge from Fox News, and that's her report of the hearing. You're not going to hear much about it. You know, our guest yesterday, Sidney Powell. Sidney is a longtime prosecutor. She's retired now, but she still writes and follows this very, very closely. And you'll notice that she was very hesitant to criticize William Barr, too, because she's been part of that system, too. That's the way it goes. Sidney speaks out about a lot of things. And the thing of it is, she had already reported that Bob Mueller has destroyed evidence. That's just huge. And she knows it's a travesty, and yet it was hard for her to criticize, and she didn't, William Barr. So I'm criticizing him. And I'm telling you, I think we have a problem. Rick Manning wrote in Fox News, he said, is there no one eligible to become the next attorney general who doesn't have a more than 25-year personal relationship with special counsel Robert Mueller? And then he goes on to say, I'm shaking my head in almost stunned disbelief. Was there no one in America who could have been appointed who isn't Bob Mueller's BFF? Rick balances his article. He talks about the qualifications of Bill Barr, which I haven't. I talked about it yesterday. Yes, on paper, he looks really good. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm wrong. I pray that I am. And so there you go. That's what's happening in Washington. That's what's happening. Maybe he'll surprise us. The president, Rasmussen, reported yesterday that the president's approval rating has gone down. It's only slight, but it's gone down. His approval rating is 43 people approve. 43 people. 43% approve and 55% disapprove. And that's attributed to the government shutdown, which, of course, is entering another day. And we're going to get to that in just a second. But I want to tell you a couple of things about the president. He, of course, had Clemson in for burgers, and you heard about it. The president said this. Let's listen, clip 7.
Do we have no food for you? Because we have a shutdown. Or do we give you some little quick salads that the first lady will make along with the second lady? They'll make some salads. And I said, you guys aren't into salads. Or do I go out, Lindsey Graham and Tim Scott, do I go out and send out for about 1,000 hamburgers, Big Macs? So we actually do.
That's appalling. It seems to me like the president will not be happy until there is not one single female Republican voter in the country. It's incredibly sexist. It also, I mean, I don't know why I'm stuck on this, but Ivanka is not the second lady. She is actually, I don't think she deserves this position. She's actually a senior advisor to the president. So the idea that he would demean her specifically in that way, he shouldn't talk about the first lady that way. We aren't all here to make salads for men. It's disgusting.
I mean, I'm presuming he was talking about Karen Pence when he said second lady.
Oh, God.
All right, you got the gist of it. Karen Burnett and her guest. It's disgusting. It's so sexist that the president should suggest that the first lady might have made salads. And so the Washington Post went further. They fact-checked. Trump did not pile burgers 1 mile high as he promised. It was a 1,200-page piece in the Washington Post. They talked about how high it would be, how many burgers they'd have to be a mile high. Of course, the inference is the president lied again because he said they had enough burgers. They were a mile high. It's just amazing. It says at 2 inches each, the 1,000 burgers would not reach a mile high. So that proves it. The president is a liar.
Hey, I'm Brant. So there's this guy named Jordan. He's a healthy guy. He's a dad of six, and he works as a guide in Alaska. And he goes to the doctor, true story, he goes to the doctor, and he's diagnosed with cancer, stage 4. And here's the thing. He had switched earlier from medical insurance to MediShare, where Christians share each other's medical bills. So the question for Jordan and his wife, Jenny, was, is this actually going to work?
Our medical bills exceeded $160,000. MediShare members shared all our bills.
And it was about more than just the money, too. This is a real community.
MediShare is a family, a group of people that stick with you through the hardest times of your life. I just don't know how I could have done it without MediShare.
It's so worth looking into. There's a reason this is growing so fast. So if you want to find out more, here is a number for you. 855-PSALM-23. That's 855-PSALM 23.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber with 8 Days of Hope. We've seen God open up so many doors for us to help serve and love those who get affected by a natural disaster.
As the trees and the wind started crashing down around us, my wife was, of course, very diligently praying, you know, Lord, please be with us.
Very simply, we do it because God commands us to love others.
I see these volunteers all as a gift from God.
And I'm just grateful they're here, you know, helping out. It's a blessing.
If you're interested in becoming a part of what God's doing through 8 Days of Hope, please go to 8daysofhope.com, click on Get Involved, submit your email address.
I've noticed that whenever there's a time in my life when things might be a little gloomy, the number one thing that I can do is to go serve somebody.
And I would encourage anyone else to, it's worth it. Come out and do it next time if you didn't make it to this one. And the Father will really bless you in it.
Thank you so much for your prayers and volunteering with 8 Days of Hope.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
Truett McConnell University.
My name is Caitlin Bird. I'm a nursing major and I'm a junior. The School of Nursing here at TMU, it's different than any other, you know, university or college out there. Every time we come into class, no matter which nursing professor it is, we always begin in devotion and prayer, and we become a family. They actually allow the students to get up and do devotion and prayer. We pray with each other and for each other, and that's just what sets us apart from any other school of nursing out there.
Are you called? Visit truett.edu today.
I received a call on my radio show the other day from an elderly woman in Arizona. She lives about 60 miles from the Mexican border. The night before, she heard a ruckus, so she went to investigate. Inside her garage, she discovered about a half dozen illegal aliens.
This is normal. In my house, in the front door, there's a shotgun. In the back door, there's a shotgun. This whole caravan of people started coming through. It's become very dangerous.
It's appalling. And yet, instead of securing the border, our elected leaders play politics. The fact is clear, especially for Americans who live in places like Arizona. There is a security crisis at the southern border. The Democrats need to stop playing games and give President Trump the money he needs to build the wall. American citizens should not have to live in fear of finding illegal aliens in their garage. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Is the President of the United States a racist?
This is a behavior of a toddler who is not getting his way.
We heard from a president held in low regard by most Americans.
His ego is too much in the way here.
Donald Trump is not a man who deals particularly well with opposition.
There is a national emergency, I would submit, and we saw it last night. It's him.
That was the montage. It's a short montage. That's kind of an idea of how the media has been speaking about Donald Trump. Honestly, it really is shocking that his approval rating is 43%. When you get that every single night, most of the media just berates him and his wife and anyone who works for him and tries to destroy them in any way they can. It's pretty amazing. I want to tell you something that the president did this morning. This came out. This is the first thing in my inbox this morning. And that is he has declared this Religious Freedom Day. I guess it's already Religious Freedom Day, but he's issued a proclamation And he says this, on Religious Freedom Day, we celebrate our nation's longstanding commitment to freedom of conscience and the freedom to profess one's own faith. The right to religious freedom is innate to the dignity of every human person and is foundational to the pursuit of truth. The pilgrims who landed at Plymouth shared an experience common to many of America's first settlers. They had fled their home countries to escape religious persecution, and it tracks the history of the pilgrims. He goes on to say, unfortunately, the fundamental human right to religious freedom is under attack. Efforts to circumscribe religious freedom or to separate it from adjoining civil liberties like property rights or free speech are on the rise. Over time, legislative and political attacks on religious freedom have given way to actual violence. And then he goes on to talk about the Tree of Life Synagogue and other kinds of attacks. He says, my administration is taking action to protect religious liberty and to seek justice against those who seek to abridge it. The Department of Justice is aggressively prosecuting those who use violence or threats to interfere with the religious freedom of their fellow Americans. He says a lot of other really fine things, and he says, therefore, I, Donald J. Trump, President of the United States, by virtue of the authority vested in me by the Constitution and the laws of the United States, do hereby proclaim January 16, 2019, as Religious Freedom Day. I call on all Americans to commemorate this day with events and activities that remind us of our shared heritage of religious liberty and that teach us how to secure this blessing both at home and around the world. So that's what this very unpopular, he's not so unpopular. I think it's actually has a pretty good rate when you consider 43% is not a disgraceful amount when you consider the barrage of criticism and hatred that he gets on a daily basis. I think it's a pretty admirable number. But this is what this president is doing. And this was one of the things he campaigned on, and it's one of the things that he's actually doing. At the same time, I have to tell you, and I'll get to that story in a little bit, but I will just mention that there is a congressman now in the House under Nancy Pelosi's leadership who is tasked with going after hate groups. I'm not sure what list they'll use. Do you think it might be the SPLC's hate group list? I wonder, because who else has a list? And who's on the list? Well, Family Research Council, and the number one on the list is the American Family Association. So this should be interesting. And if you ask me why Christians support this president, if for no other reason, it is that reason, because we know that religious freedom is under attack, and it's only going to get worse, given what we see in the headlines every single day. I want to go back to, I want to talk to you about the shutdown, because Griff Jenkins, on a report this morning on Fox and Friends, gave us more information about this latest caravan that's forming to cross our southern border. Here it is.
We are at Agua Caliente, which is the northwesternmost crossing point between Honduras and Guatemala. I'll give you a little look behind me. This is about 50 or 60 federal police for Honduras lining the border, which is just feet behind me to cross over. And you have several hundred migrants who have been camping out all night waiting for this border to open up, building a fire. They're waiting to line up to show their papers because they have an agreement between Honduras and Guatemala that they will be able to cross peacefully. But there was a bit of a clash last night causing the police to release some tear gas to get things under control. It's a mix of women and children and men, the men getting impatient because they were giving priority to women and children. Now, yesterday we ran into the vice foreign minister, a woman named Nelly Jerez. She's a vice foreign minister in charge of immigration. And I asked her what the number one reason for people leaving. She said that actually fleeing violence is the third reason people leave. I said, what was number one and two? Here's what Nelly Jerez said.
It's a better job, quality of life. They want a better quality of life. And the second issue is reunification of families.
Now let's talk about what's going to happen now if the migrants are able to peacefully cross this morning, which is what we expect to happen at 6 a.m. local time in just about an hour. They will then march 200 miles towards the Mexico-Guatemala border, and we expect their numbers to grow significantly, possibly even double. They're at 2,000 now, and it's going to get larger because that first caravan I covered, remember, it was about a third of it was made up of Guatemalan citizens wanting also to get to America. I asked the foreign minister, by the way, if they were telling this caravan that they would not get into the U.S. just for a job. They said, yes, they're discouraging it and trying to get people to turn back. But obviously, as you see, the migrants are not doing any such thing.
All right, Griff Jenkins on Fox News this morning. And so, but of course, there's no emergency at the southern border, nothing to worry about. And you can imagine that if we cannot establish a strong border and cannot enforce our laws, we will be overwhelmed. There will be nothing that we can do. I remember, you know, when I read Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire when I was much younger. It's a huge book, by the way. You should read it. But you can learn a lot from what happened to the Roman Empire. And one of it was that they began to be invaded by what they called the hordes. And they couldn't control it. And so it just overcame what was Rome, and they took power. And so, you know what? And of course, the left wants to make this all about race. Could I just say, I know it's kind of a odd concept, but there are a lot of Americans that are Hispanic. There are a lot of Americans who are Dutch. There are a lot of Americans who are African. Could I just fill in the blanks? We are Americans. This is our homeland, regardless of color, and we are not obliged to allow endless amounts of people from other countries, regardless of their color or nationality, to invade our border and come in and take our social services and usurp the rights and drain the coffers of the American people. Yet, we have an evangelical group asking for the president to end this shutdown. So they sent a letter to Trump and to Congress. It's in the Christian Post. And this is what it says. An evangelical group that seeks to promote immigration reform has called upon President Donald Trump and Congress to end the government shutdown through what it described as a bipartisan immigration compromise. Their compromise is that they would like to secure the border and provide legalization, citizenship to those that are here now. The scriptures both instruct a respect for the rule of law, which is diminished when immigration laws are violated without consequence, and mandate our concern for the well-being of vulnerable immigrants and their families, many of whom are longstanding members of our local churches throughout the United States. I just have to interject this thing before I tell you more about this. I remember, do you not remember the book of Philemon? Philemon was a runaway slave. And Paul's admonition to Philemon was to go back to his master. He also admonished the master, whose name I can't remember, to consider freedom. But he didn't ask, he didn't demand it. He wanted Philemon to go back and make it right. But these church leaders would excuse their congregants and the people that they know for breaking the laws of this country, entering here illegally, living in the shadows and whatever else they do to survive here, including probably taking Social Security numbers from Americans. I mean, that's not that everybody does that, but they do. That's just a problem. It's a huge problem. Rather than tell them to go back and make this right, they want us to grant them clemency, to grant them full status, because after all, they are members of their congregation. Somehow I don't think that's biblical, but I want to go on and say that this is the immigration table. We've talked about this organization before. It is funded by George Soros. Now, I'm not saying in its entirety, but it is and has been funded by George Soros, the leftist atheist billionaire who is hell-bent on destroying this country, who wants open borders worldwide. He's done lots of mischief around the globe. The National Association of Evangelicals has signed on. They've been apostates since Rich Cizik was outed. The World Relief is just, I just don't know what's happened to them either. But we also have on this the Wesleyan Church. Joanne Lyon, the ambassador and general superintendent of the Wesleyan Church, Russell Moore, president of the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission of the Southern Baptist Convention, World Vision, which has gone off the rails a long time ago, and Sammy Rodriguez, who is the National Hispanic Christian Leadership Conference. Now, that doesn't mean that these guys are not committed Christians. I don't know about all of them. It means that they are cooperating with an entity that its foundings are corrupt. George Soros, his intention and the intention of the left is to co-opt Christian churches, evangelicals. They've already done mainstream churches. They're now trying to co-opt evangelicals and pull them over. And they use lots of scripture verses in the context of it. Maybe Sam Rodriguez doesn't know that. I, I hope he doesn't know that. I can't imagine that he does know that. But that's what's happening. And so they're doing their part to push for legalization of the immigrants that are here. And I reject that. I reject it. Maybe there's some compromise, but I think they have been duped willingly or unwittingly, and I hope unwittingly. Meanwhile, the government remains shut down. Yesterday, the president invited Democratic leaders, Democrats, to his offices. He invited them for lunch. He had a plan. He was trying to negotiate with them other things. He had actually points to make, and they didn't show up. They refused to come. And in addition to that, victims of illegal immigration went into Nancy Pelosi's office, angel families, those whose children and loved ones have been killed by illegal immigrants, marched in Capitol Hill. They went to her office. She refused to see them. And they were joined by Representatives Mo Brooks, Louie Gohmert, and Matt Gaetz, and others. They also joined Women for Trump in front of the Capitol building for a press conference. And I could go on and on about that. But the point is, of course, Mrs. Pelosi doesn't want to hear from those kinds of people. That's inconvenient information. Meanwhile, a New York federal judge blocked President Trump's attempt to add a question on the 2020 census. You know, the census only takes place every 10 years. The question is so controversial. Oh, let me just put it in context. The census, hang on a minute, let me read this to you. The census now asks age, sex, race, and ethnicity of each person in the household. But the question they want to ask is, are you a citizen? They want to ask, in the census, you, living in this country, on American soil, are you a citizen? They want to take note of that. They want to know who's here, who is not a citizen. That could be legally or illegally. The argument is that the illegal immigrants are scared, it'll frighten them. And here's the deal. Guess who wants this? They're called NGO plaintiffs, or who doesn't want this. They've taken this to the courts. And of course, a judge ruled against President Trump on Monday. Who's pushing against this question? It's what's called the NGO plaintiffs. They're comprised of the New York Immigration Coalition, Casa de Maryland, which is that rabidly left communist organization in Maryland, pushes for open borders, illegals, American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. They are radical leftist organizations. And the reason they're so upset, besides the obvious, is that they live off government spending that is dictated by census numbers. So when the census numbers are turned in and we find out how many people live here, they are turned over, and then the states are apportioned in addition to these groups. I don't know how the groups get money. I'm sure this explains it further. But states are given money according to their population and who's there. They are also given representation by various, they have congressional districts. And even though the people are legal or illegal, they are given, they're given, the numbers count for adding congressmen to their districts or to their states. And so California, of course, is really objecting to this because, heavens, they might lose many of their congressmen if actually we knew that many of their constituents are illegal immigrants who don't deserve representation in the United States Congress. There's a lot of things to say about this. Mike Gonzalez is with the Heritage Foundation. Mike and Hans von Spakowski have prepared these talking points. We'll put this on our Facebook page because I think it's really worth you seeing, and I don't have time to go through it all, but can you imagine that somehow this is not the business of the United States of America to know who's a citizen and who isn't? Mike and Hans say the only classification that government should be inquiring about is whether a resident is a citizen or not, not the sex, sexual orientation, ethnicity, race, etc. of a resident. It matters on which the law should be blind. All right, so these special interest groups, radical leftist groups, are upset because they'll lose their funding. And leftists are also upset because they might lose some of their congressmen if the numbers show that the people living in their districts are illegal immigrants. So, the president is asking it to be expedited in the Supreme Court because the census is going to be, I think the final numbers are, final documents are going out in June. I don't know if it actually starts in June. No, it would be the final document. And so the president is asking for this to be expedited by the Supreme Court. I just have no idea what they're going to say. My very honest criticism of that is we have a lot of squishes on the immigration issue in the court. The Roman Catholic Church is pushing for the legalization, and there are a lot of really strong Roman Catholics, including John Roberts. And so I would be surprised if they ruled in favor of President Trump. But that's my prediction, my assumption. What do I know? Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The borrower is the slave of the lender. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. Newly published information from Lifeway Research shows 77% of self-identified Christians in dozens of states think it's a sin to lend money to someone who can't afford to pay it back. Still, few say payday loans are immoral, and 1 in 6 Christians has admitted to taking out a high-interest payday loan. The federal government's Consumer Financial Protection Bureau says a typical 2-week payday loan charges the equivalent of a 400% interest rate. These sharks prey on the poor, elderly, and most vulnerable in society. Sound the alarm and make sure your family, church, and neighborhood steer clear of this vermin.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
Brian Fisher here with today's Life and Liberty Minute. Several weeks ago, I interviewed Philip Zodiates on Focal Point. This was one day before he started serving a 3-year prison term. He was sentenced for helping a mother, Janet Miller, protect her young daughter, Isabella, from sexual abuse at the hands of a lesbian ex-partner. Janet honored the judge's decision granting her former lover visitation rights, but stopped when her daughter reported unwanted sexual touching on these visits. In response, the judge awarded full custody to the abusive lesbian. To protect her daughter, Janet had no option but to leave the country. Philip drove her to New York, where she took a cab to Canada and boarded a plane to Nicaragua. Philip requested a stay on his sentence. His request went to Neil Gorsuch, who denied it without comment, leaving Philip to hope for a pardon to get justice. May it be done.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. You can't squeeze more into 3 days than we will in Washington, D.C. on our Spiritual Heritage Tour in June and in September. We're going to the Capitol, Library of Congress, the Supreme Court, Lincoln Memorial, the Korean and Vietnam Memorials, the Iwo Jima Memorial, the Arlington National Cemetery, the White House, that's outside, Jefferson Memorial, and the National Archives, and we're going to Mount Vernon on that Saturday of our tour. So much to see, so much to do, and it includes lectures and talks from Stephen McDowell, who will be our historian along the way. For more information on these June or September Spiritual Heritage Tours, and the separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. For all the information on this, go to spiritualheritagetours.com. That's spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. In a tweet on Sunday, President Trump threatened Islamist Turkey, promising devastating economic sanctions if it attacked Kurds inside Syria. It would appear he has correctly concluded that the Turks are allies no more and will be pursuing policies reflecting that reality. It's high time. After all, under the Sharia supremacist Erdogan regime, Turkey has repeatedly demonstrated that it is playing for the other team, buying advanced weapons from Russia and China, violating sanctions to trade with Iran, pushing migrants into Europe, threatening Israel, and enabling ISIS. A principal concern about Mr. Trump's decision quickly to withdraw the small contingent of U.S. special forces on the ground in Syria was the prospect that the Turks would see it as a green light to crush our Kurdish allies there. Here's hoping that the threat of devastating U.S. economic sanctions will prevent that from happening. This is Frank Gaffney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Mama, look, you won. Bullies don't win. And I said, baby, they don't. Because we're going to go in there, we're going to impeach the mother.
Freshman Congressman Rashida Tlaib, we played that last 2 weeks ago when she was first. That was the evening that that was the evening of the day she was sworn in the Congress. She's a freshman congressman from Michigan. But, of course, the story didn't really end there. It was offensive enough that she said what she did about the president. But now we know that at her swearing-in ceremony, Abbas Hamida, a staunch defender of the terrorist group Hezbollah, posted photos of the two of them posing at her swearing-in ceremony in Detroit. Mr. Hamida, who is he? He's the co-founder of the pro-Palestinian group Al-Wada, which means right of return, which praises Hezbollah leaders that are terrible instigators of terrorism. They declare that Israel has no right to exist. In 2015, Mr. Hamida called convicted terrorist Samir Kuntur a legendary Hezbollah martyr after he killed four Israelis. Max Zemiroff, who's the executive director for research and campus strategy of the pro-Israel group Stand With Us, said that Mr. Hamida has a long record of incendiary rhetoric. There's a litany of disturbing comments along those lines. No member of Congress, Republican or Democrat, should be associating with people who are racist or who support violence against innocent people. Mr. Hamida responded when this was made public that Rashida Tlaib asked him, then there's a picture of her next to him at her swearing-in ceremony. Mr. Hamida responded by just doubling down on his blasts against Israel. He tweeted, "The illegal terrorist entity of Israel doesn't have a right to exist on top of stolen Palestinian land. Criminal Zionists are going apes over one picture. Imagine when we take selfies in a liberated Jerusalem." That's what he tweeted. That's that good friend to our new Congresswoman, Rashida Tlaib. And then, of course, we have, you probably saw her in her hijab yesterday in clips. I should have had Adam pull it, but she was talking about how we have to get the government open. And so her name is Ilhan Omar. And remember that Ilhan Omar married her brother in order to get into the United States. So here we go. This is what's happening in your House of Representatives. And yet, Congressman Steve King, who's been serving in the United States House of Representatives for I don't know how many years, faithfully defending the Constitution, defending Western civilization, which is our civilization, by the way, defending life, speaking out boldly. This has been Congressman Steve King for decades. House Republican leaders moved to strip Congressman Steve King of his committee assignments over comments about white nationalism. I have a lot to say about that, but let me let Mike Emanuel kind of lay out the facts of this before I do. Let's listen.
The punishment continues for Iowa Republican Congressman Steve King, with his colleagues voting 424-1 on a resolution of disapproval.
When elected representatives give cover and comfort to those who spread racial divisiveness, we embolden those on the fringes of our society.
King is in hot water for defending the terms white supremacy and white nationalism in a recent interview. On the House floor, King told his colleagues he agreed with the resolution of disapproval.
Let's vote for this resolution. I'm putting up a yes on the board here because what you say here is right and it's true and it's just.
A senior member of the Congressional Black Caucus was the only no vote, pushing instead for King to be censured.
Steve King has made a career out of being a racist. And right now, Steve King needs to be censored.
But only 23 members of the House have ever been censured. The most recent, New York Democrat Charles Rangel, for ethics violations in 2010. Last night, House Republican leadership kicked King off his committee assignments for his latest controversial comments. Today, the House GOP leader stopped short of suggesting he should resign from Congress.
I think that's up to Steve King. The voters have elected him. The House Republicans denounce his language.
The third-ranking House Republican leader went further, saying it's time for King to go for his white nationalism comments.
We do not support it or agree with it, and as I said, I think he should find another line of work.
King responded to being stripped of his committee assignments, saying, quote, "Leader McCarthy's decision to remove me from committees is a political decision that ignores the truth."
Pressure is clearly building on Steve King. The Des Moines Register editorial page is now calling on Steve King to resign. It says he
he has lost even the potential to effectively represent his Iowa constituents based on these latest controversial comments. Brett.
So how did this start? Congressman Steve King was called by the New York Times after hours. His worst crime was to pick up the phone and actually give them an interview. I told someone just yesterday, I remember being at Logan Airport in Boston, just getting ready to catch a flight, and my phone rang, and the caller ID on it was 111-111-1111. And honestly, I thought, what is this, God calling me? Would that not be his number? Who's calling me? I picked up the phone. It was the New York Times. And they wanted my comments on something. And it was not, I mean, that happened all the time. That happens all the time. Except when reporters call members of Congress, they generally record the conversation. Now, the New York Times is, you know, playing dumb on this. And Congressman King, as I understand it, did not record the conversation. I think he was caught off guard. He should not have given this interview. I think it lasted 53 minutes. And in that conversation, they claim that he defended the terms white supremacist and whatever the term was. I don't believe that's true. I believe he has been misquoted. I do not believe he's a white supremacist. I have known him for years. There's not a hint of that in him. You can defend Western civilization and this country without defending any kind of white doctrine. So I'm going to read, white nationalist was the other term. Let me read to you what Congressman King said in his statement in response to Kevin McCarthy stripping him of all his committee assignments. Instead of defending them, and instead of them thinking that maybe the New York Times is up to no good here, they are happy to destroy him because he's a thorn in their flesh. But let me read what Congressman King says in his own defense. Leader McCarthy's decision to remove me from committees is a political decision that ignores the truth. The truth is as follows. One of my quotes in a New York Times story has been completely mischaracterized. Here's the context I believe accurately reflects my statement. In a 56-minute interview, we discussed the changing use of language in political discourse. We discussed the worn-out label racist, and my observation that other slanderous labels have been increasingly assigned to conservatives by the left, who injected into our current political dialogue such terms as Nazi, fascist, white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization. How did that language become offensive? Why did I sit in classes teaching me about the merits of our history and our civilization just to watch Western civilization become a derogatory term in political discourse today? Clearly, I was only referencing Western civilization classes. No one ever sat in a class listening to the merits of white nationalism and white supremacy. When I used the word that, it was in reference only to Western civilization and not to any previously stated evil ideology, all of which I have denounced. My record as a vocal advocate for Western civilization is nearly as full as my record in defense of freedom of speech. Ultimately, I told him, you have to do what you have to do, speaking of McCarthy, and I will do what I have to do. I will continue to point out the truth and work with all the vigor that I have to represent 4th District Iowans for at least the next 2 years. Okay, so now they're pushing for his resignation. They don't defend him. Mitch McConnell has come out and said that his comments are unwelcome and unworthy of his elected position. Listen, McConnell and the others better be careful. If they think for a moment that the New York Times won't come after them and trap them in the same way and misquote and try to destroy them, they're out of their minds. And yet they do this, and they're happy that this happened to Steve King. And so last night, yes, they voted on a resolution. Steve King said publicly that he said that he would vote for it, too, because he thinks the resolution is right. He said that he just went to the floor, gave his side about the New York Times, taking his remarks out of context, then saying that he would vote for the resolution because he condemns white nationalism, supremacism, and has shown by word and deed that he believes that all men are created equal. And so the resolution was offered by Majority Whip Jim Clyburn in response to remarks from King in a New York Times article asking why nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? That's what his crime is, by the way. To be specific, the New York Times article said that King said, white nationalist, white supremacist, Western civilization, how did that language become offensive? You heard King's defense of that. He said he's speaking of Western civilization and the terms themselves, why they've been used and chosen to use against people, racist, whatever, to destroy people. Ronna McDaniel, who is the head of the Republican Party, tweeted out, the GOP leaders made the right decision. There's no place for white supremacy in our country, and it's totally inconsistent with the Republican Party. And then she says, I hope Nancy Pelosi also takes action against all the Democrats who continue to associate with prominent anti-Semite Louis Farrakhan. She doesn't even mention Rashida Tlaib or the other woman that I mentioned earlier. And could I just say, even that, it sounds as though Ronna McDaniel's doing something right, but she's not. Because what she's doing there is making moral equivalence between people in the Congress who really are racists, who work with Louis Farrakhan, who worked with members of the Palestinian organization who hate Israel and have their pictures taken with them. That's real racism. When you want a nation to be destroyed, when you are with Louis Farrakhan and he hates Jews, and you picture yourself beside him and support him, as many in the Black Caucus do and have done, including Maxine Waters. And so they are real racists. Steve King has been slandered by the New York Times. He has never been a racist. It's by something that they say he said, for which there is no recording. He has no way of defending himself, and it is like a lynching. It really is. You know, lynching can be done to whites and blacks. It can be done to the wrong kinds of blacks. Ask Clarence Thomas about that. And so, by the way, the House Democrat who's in charge of now looking into hate groups, you know, using some list, I'm not sure, maybe the SPLC, is now also, now we know, he was happy to appear on the Nation of Islam radio show. He, too, is a racist. So there you go. The inequities are unbelievable. And to show you how ridiculous this is getting, I want to play quickly, if I can, clip 9. This is David Webb, who is a Fox News contributor. I'm not going to tell you much about him because you'll probably remember him when you hear his voice. And he is speaking with Areva Martin on, just let's listen.
I've chosen to cross different parts of the media world, done the work so that I'm qualified to be in each one. I never considered my color the issue. I considered my qualifications the issue.
Well, David, you know, that's a whole nother long conversation about white privilege and things that you have the privilege of doing that people of color don't have the privilege of.
How do I have the privilege of white privilege?
David, by virtue of being a white male, you have white privilege. This whole long conversation, I don't have time to get
Areva, I hate to break it to you, but you should have been better prepped. I'm black.
Okay, then I stand.
See, you went to white privilege. This is the falsehood in this. You went immediately with an assumption. Your people, obviously, or you didn't look. You're talking to a black man who started out in rock radio in Boston, who crossed the paths into hip-hop, rebuilding one of the greatest black stations in America, and went on to work for Fox News, where I'm told apparently blacks aren't supposed to work, but yet you come with this assumption and you go to white privilege.
Okay, let me correct him, because you get the point. This is just madness. It's gotten out of control. Nicole Wallace on MSNBC says, part of the problem is we think this does not have a parallel on the left. There isn't a strain of racism on the left, says Nicole Wallace. And the New York Times, just this morning, even as I'm talking to you, this came into my inbox. This is what they say. The next generation of conservative movement activists, including Paul Weyrich, a key mentor of Newt Gingrich, Morton Blackwell, and Richard Viguerie, adopted a more pugilistic approach that brought together radical and mainstream elements on the right. In the 1970s, they avoided traditional Republican small government political appeals in favor of mobilizations over busing, abortion, and gay rights, while courting the segregationist George Wallace and their fateful alliance between Christian evangelicals and the Republican Party. You see where this is going. Steve King may be a victim of all of this, and the Republicans are happy to get rid of him, but the bus is coming after them. Trust me. And it's coming after all of us, those of us that are conservative Christians and especially white. It's a mess. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.